I'm Kyle.
And I'm Ryan.
And when our powers combine, we form
Experience Grind Podcast.
The podcast where, for better or worse, for good or bad, we grind out every experience we encounter and try to give you our honest opinions on those experiences as we see them.
You are getting so good at that intro.
I'm doing it from memory now.
I know. That's why. It's incredible.
It's not bad. It's not bad. So
more memory than I'd have for it.
Welcome,
that's awesome.
Welcome new people. Welcome old people. Not old people in age, but...
Old people don't listen to this podcast.
People who have... Man, if old people did, they would be like, what is this newfangled garbage?
What's a podcast?
It's like old-time radio.
I got nothing.
That wasn't even that good.
We ran that into the ground.
Yeah. Well before that happened. Whoa. Did you see break? I'm going to go fatty. I'm the fat one on this podcast. How did your seat break? What the hell is happening?
I might have been fiddling around with a lever. It's not podcasting until you break a seat.
Oh, what? Hashtag broken seat as fuck.
Broken seat.
We're gonna get that hashtag. Trending.
I forgot about that hashtag.
Blank as fuck.
Blank as fuck. So
I think the Tadpog guys did something as fuck in the last episode.
Did they really?
And I can't remember. They were talking about Russell Fest, and they said something in there that was as fuck, and I almost talked about it, and I didn't.
They beat us to it.
I should. No,
I think
we
that
did
came
it
out,
before.
That came out by the time Mars is gonna come out.
Yeah, is it? Maybe.
I think it will.
I don't know.
I think it will.
Before we get really into this, let's talk about our sponsor. We've had a great sponsor this year so far.
Yeah, in 2016, we are keeping it epic with Andre. Yes. Hashtag epic with Andre.
Hashtag epic with Andre. This week, we are drinking the Andre Extra Dry.
Mm-hmm.
I've recently done some more research on champagnes, and I found out that Extra Dry is the second sweetest of all champagnes.
Where is Brut on that scale?
Brut is more in the middle,
okay.
I believe.
I like Brut.
Okay, I don't think we've done Andre Brut.
Not a critique or a comment.
No, no.
But
it's actually.
I know
it's
I've had
good.
Brut in the past. And I like
think
Brut.
Out of everything we do get, I get the extra dry most frequently.
So if it's all right, so if it's dry and then it's extra dry, is that more sweet?
Yes, extra dry is sweeter than dry.
Oh, okay, okay, that makes sense.
And then Brut, I believe, is under dry. They move that way. There's one more that's actually sweeter than extra dry, and I can't remember it right now.
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah, but. Andre Champagne, extra dry. It's very, very good. It's very crisp.
It is. It's refreshing.
It goes down smooth. It keeps everything epic.
After a long day of work, there's nothing more I like putting in my mouth than Andre. Hashtag in my mouth as fuck.
Oh, in my mouth as fuck. So this episode, our subject this week is your number one movie.
It is.
Which is
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind by Michel Gondry.
And this movie...
It's fantastic, I know, but...
Yes, it is, but we're going to get into these introductions a little bit. This movie takes place on Valentine's Day.
It does.
And if everything's gone according to schedule, this episode has been released 4 days after Valentine's Day.
So you guys just had a lovely Valentine's Day weekend, hopefully.
Or everything went to total and complete shit.
Yeah, because you took your wife to see Deadpool and then tell her it was a superhero movie.
Yeah, if she saw the banners, then she would be led to believe it was a rom-com.
Yeah, but it's not.
But on that note, let's talk about some rom-coms here.
Let's talk about some rom-coms. So, Kyle, are there any rom-coms you like?
Any that I like?
Yeah, because before we started, you were talking, you don't even know if there's a good rom-com.
I don't generally like them. They're all so formulaic.
Oh, but every movie's formulaic.
To an extent, but like I feel a rom-com doesn't even try to change up anything. Like the rom-com is going to, at a point, somehow the guy is doing something and he's hiding it from the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to discover this thing. And then rather than giving him a chance to explain it, she's going to get mad and never want to see him again. And then he will still somehow magically make her see her. And she realizes, oh, wait, I do love this big oaf. Everything's fine. That's like 99% of rom-coms, I feel, that I just described.
I think that's 99% of the mainstream rom-coms. I think...
And that's really all I've been exposed
to. Yeah, there's definitely been some more under-key ones. Low-key ones.
Okay, if there's one that I do like, and there's one that I do like, I do enjoy it quite a bit, actually. And it stars Ryan Reynolds.
Is it Anna definitely Faris. Maybe? No.
No, it's the one where he's like a movie producer or a music producer. What is the name of this? Now I feel terrible.
Ryan Just Reynolds. Friends.
Yes, Just Friends, where he's the fat kid in high school.
Yeah.
I like that one quite a lot, actually.
That's
That's a rom-com.
It's a rom-com. I think it skews more calm than rom.
Well, but it's got all the rom-com tropes too. But I think it's more vulgar than rom-coms generally are.
Yeah.
So I think that's maybe why I like it a lot.
It's really good.
It's one I like a lot.
Yeah.
So there is one that I do like.
Well, there you go.
And it's just Friends. Ryan Reynolds is great in that, as is Anna Faris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Her. The blonde girl. Manic. It's Amy Smart.
Amy Smart. Thank you.
Yeah.
She shows her boobs in Road Trip.
Does she?
Yeah.
I don't remember this.
Well, when we rewatch it with our good friends, the Mappets, sometime in the future, you'll see. She shows boobies.
Okay.
They're not bad.
That's Amy Smart. All I can think of now is the scene in Mirrors where she rips her jaw off. And now no matter what boobs she's working with, like, I'm not going to be happy because I've seen her jaw get ripped from her face.
Fair enough. Okay.
And it's horrifying.
So what?
Rom-coms.
What rom-coms do you like? Like, I don't get this. You said you're a sap, but I'm a sap too. And I still don't like them really.
I'm a sap. And when it comes to rom-com, I think you're definitely right. They are mostly formulaic, especially, again, the mainstream ones. But I'm okay with that because I go in expecting that. Like, that's kind of what you're in for. You're in for that. But there are some, like, the best ones are ones where there's no fault of anybody. It's just something doesn't work out or whatever. Like, the conflict is not inherently like, oh, he's hiding a secret or she's doing this. And it's just people are different and we can either work on it or not work on it, whatever. And those seem to be like the most successful.
So give me an example of one of those.
I was saying that. I don't think I have an example aside from Eternal Sunshine. Because I think that's that, but like that'll come later.
I'll get into that too, because I have something to say about that.
I am very curious as to what you have to say. But Love Actually,
I've never seen,
is one I kind of love. And it's another one that you don't think is an R-rated vulgar film, but it is.
Really? So it's got an R.
It is. It's actually pretty R-rated. Not only do you say fucks and shits, but like it's a movie like Crash, whereas Crash is like all these intersecting stories about racism and its effect on people's lives. Love Actually is about that with love. And one of the stories is two people working on a porn film, falling in love and getting like their first date while shooting this porn film. So it's Martin Freeman, actually, Bilbo Baggins himself.
Yeah.
And then I don't remember the lady, but they're literally filming sex scenes where they're dry humping naked on top of each other and all this while they're having like this meet cute and like going through like the first date scenarios and talking about their interests and everything and getting to know each other. It's really smart. Hmm. But in that same film, you have like, you know, brotherly love, like a record producer, like a fucking Grinch of a record producer, played by Bill Nighy, and like his assistant, who's his best friend. And he finds himself being like alone and betrayed on Christmas by like this song, and the friend's there. So it goes that, it goes like a couple on the brink of divorce, some real sad shit. And it's just all over the place. I think the weakest thing in there is Hugh Grant's president stuff is a little...
Hugh Grant is the president?
He's the prime minister. Billy Bob Thornton is the president of America who comes in for a scene. I think at that time, man, he's probably riffing on Bush.
You're coming and then you're
it's
going
crazy.
With me. Yeah,
it's crazy. I think it's a movie to be seen, but that's one. And then one that I saw recently, like I really, really love and admire, is called The Overnight, which is a rom-com about a couple who's kind of hitting the rocks, who's not quite having, you know, super success in the relationship. They just had a kid, they're kind of falling a little bit out of love, and they get roped into a swinging situation. And it's the girl from Orange is the New Black, Adam Scott, and Jason Schwartzman. I can't think of the girl's name.
Well, I like Adam Scott and
Jason Schwartzman. And Jason Schwartzman is like the artistic swinging couple side, and it's really interesting what happens in that movie.
Of course, Adam Scott is the straight-laced.
Yes, he's very straight-laced.
He's got to be.
And it says some really interesting things about marriage and relationships and like what happens if you don't put into work and like just the ability to live with somebody but kind of fall out of love with them and like what it takes to like keep that up. And then like, you know, the swingy thing, like, is this the answer? And like, I'm not going to ruin the movie, but it says a lot of interesting things.
So what's your opinion on something like The Breakup?
Is that the Vince Vaughn?
Jennifer Aniston.
I actually really like it, but that's not a rom-com. That's like a rom-sad.
You think? See?
There was no comedy in that movie except for the Yes, Owner of a Lonely Heart table scene.
It was pitched as a rom-com, I feel. What about...
Not.
There's another one that...
But I really like that movie.
I like it too. It's okay. And it's another Vince Vaughn. What about Wedding Crashers?
I love Wedding Crashers.
Is that a rom-com you feel?
I think that one is a little bit. I think that one swings more towards the com.
Yeah.
And if we're going down that route, I'd also say like Knocked Up. I fucking love Knocked Up. That was actually like a strong contender for my top 10. Like, it's not in my top 5. That's in my top 10.
That's crazy. I kind of wish it would have. Knocked Up is the only one of the Judd Apatow vehicles I've not seen.
Oh my gosh. And you've seen Funny People, but you've not seen...
I've seen Funny People, and I've seen... I think 40-Year-Old Virgin is his best. That's me.
It is. This is where the sap comes in, and that's why I kind of favor Knocked Up, because, again, I kind of like that relationship arc in that movie, and I love the comparison between Paul Rudd and Leslie Mann as, like, the coupled married after 10 years, and then Seth Rogen and Katherine Heigl, like, looking at that as their future. It's like the Ghost of Christmas Future. And they're fucked up. They're really fucked up.
I have a real problem with Katherine Heigl. I just don't like her.
No, I hate her too.
So,
yeah.
But that says something if she's still in one of your favorites.
Most of Hollywood hates her too.
Yeah, that's good reason.
I'll give you a hint, Kyle. I'm very good at separating art from the artist.
I am too, actually.
I'm very good at it.
But at some points, like, I just don't care. Like, I don't care about you, Katherine Heigl. I don't want to see your stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's
because
the one I've seen of
hers. I don't think she's as good an actress to be that way. Like, another actress I feel that way with is Gwyneth Paltrow. I hate her as a person. Mm. She's a pretty fucking good actress, though. I can get over that.
Yeah.
She brings a lot to a lot of her parts. But
agreed. She hasn't done too much acting-wise. Like, I know she's Pepper Potts in the Marvel movies.
Pepper Potts. She was in that, like,
what a tour de force she is.
She was in that one movie, though. It was like a remake of Outbreak.
Contagion.
Contagion.
She fucking
was really good in that. Yeah.
For spoiler alert, for the 5 minutes she's on film.
Yeah, but she was fucking owned that section.
She did.
Yeah.
All right, so let's just talk about Contagion. Like, what a fucking fantastic movie it is. It
creeps me out, man.
The balls to kill that character off in 5 minutes.
Creeps me out.
Yeah, it's... it's great.
It's good. Viruses are creepy to me.
Jude Law is fantastic in that movie.
There's one. Okay. Another. I just thought of another rom-com I kind of really like. And it's silly and it's dumb. And again, this is a weird thing because it also stars Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, man. I'm seeing a trend.
Also Jason Bateman, and they switch bodies.
Oh, the change-up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of good. It's dumb. It's silly. But it's fun.
I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it. I liked it okay.
Yeah.
I liked it okay. That's how I felt about it. I don't remember any of the jokes. I know, like, at one point the baby poops or throws up, like, in Jason Bateman's face, and I was like, okay.
I just remember Leslie Mann taking a giant dump with the door open.
Yeah.
And then she gets in bed and tries to snuggle, and Ryan Reynolds and Jason Bateman's body says, "Don't point that hot cannon at me."
I do remember that.
I like that line a lot.
Also, she had fake boobs.
It was a body double, yeah.
They CG'd her head onto it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which actually happens quite often.
Yeah, I didn't know this, but...
I guess in...
crazy.
Yeah, in Game of Thrones, almost every time Khaleesi's naked, it's a body double.
Oh, see, I didn't know that. I knew about Lena Headey.
Yeah, when she's naked walking through the streets.
Might be a spoiler.
Yeah, fuck it.
Okay. That's her attitude? I was trying to tiptoe around it.
New season's about to come out. I mean, we're going to eventually have the spoiler warning at the beginning of everything. So you come into this.
You ruined somebody's day.
Insult. Yeah, hey, man.
Maybe. I don't know. It's not the biggest thing.
I had that show ruined for me.
Yeah.
I had Breaking Bad ruined
spoiler
for me.
Spoiler alert. You could skip ahead like 15 seconds if you want to. I had Joffrey's death ruined for me.
Really?
Before
that
it happened.
That was a good one.
I know.
Yeah.
I was super disappointed by that.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
Spoiler alert. Another 15 seconds. I had Jon Snow. Totally spoiler. And that's a huge thing, man.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I guess that when she's walking through the streets, that's a body double.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I was sad because there was not a bad butt on that body double.
No.
It was okay.
Was it quality? Did it pass the Kyle?
It wasn't quite Helen Parr level
butt inspection.
Not quite Mrs. Incredible level, but it was up there. It was up there.
It's because Miss Incredible has a mom butt. I think Kyle likes mom butts.
Yeah, for the most part.
That's what we need to do. We need to get to Hollywood, make a rom-com about mom butt.
Dude.
And then you're going to turn around.
Let's write this screenplay right now. Forget this episode. This is the mom butt screenplay episode.
This is like Kevin Smith doing Tusk on podcast. We're going to come up with mom butt the movie.
Yeah, man. And the movie, like the poster, can be a mom butt, but also in the shape
of a heart. It's
a heart. Yeah, yes. Dude.
It writes itself. It writes itself.
We're geniuses. Give us money, Hollywood. All the monies.
Her heart was big enough, though. Her pants might not be. Mom butt. Done.
So, Valentine's Day, it happened. And if you were smart, you took your lady out and you treated her to a nice evening and enjoyed a bottle of André California champagne with her.
Yeah.
And made things go well and kept it hashtag epic with Andre on Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you did. But let's get into this movie.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I'm gonna let you take point for a little bit on this.
Okay.
Because this is your number one.
And this is my number one.
I kind of took point on my number one, mm-hmm. which is, and that's understandable. And then I'll pepper in here some things in that. And
okay.
But this is the movie, you have giant respect for it. So take it away.
This came out roughly the same time as Punch Drunk Love. And I think that's probably a reason it's on. This one's on my list, and it's a reason Punch Drunk Love is on your list, because I think it hits at that right time where, movie-wise, you're not in the mood for a summer blockbuster. You're not in the mood for, like, an action film or comedy. Like, you start getting, like, this deeper understanding. Like, you start piecing together things. And this is the movie that, like, I started piecing together as more than, like, haha, that's a funny line, or, like, that's funny. Like, it started telling a deeper story than just what was on the film. And it kind of really hit close to home, I want to say. Much as you were talking about Barry Egan, Adam Sandler, and Punch Drunk Love, like, relating to that character and the emotions, I really strongly relate to Joel.
I can see that, yeah.
And I always felt that way. And going back this time and watching it again, I was like, oh man, I was a little turd, wasn't I? And I probably was, because I mean, I was Joel when I was 20. Like, there are so many quotes, like, from the opening narration of the movie. Like, he says, my chances are diminished, seeing as I'm incapable of ever making eye contact with any woman, or, like, these things like this. And it just speaks so true to, like, how I felt. And Charlie Kaufman, who is the writer of this film, I think he and Spike Jonze and Michel Gondry all worked on the script. Michel Gondry
definitely
was the director.
You can definitely see Spike Jonze in this movie.
Yeah, the Spike Jonze is, I think, the more the memory stuff and kind of like
absolutely.
The visual flourishes. Him and Michel Gondry, I think, worked in that. Whereas Charlie Kaufman really gets just like the cynical kind of, oh man, just open bleeding heart letter to love and like the good and the bad that comes with that. That's Charlie Kaufman. And I always find myself identifying with any of his films, whether it's Eternal Sunshine, Synecdoche, New York. And I've not seen Anomalisa, but I'm pretty sure that one's also going to speak to me in the exact same way.
I just want to say, like, before we get really deep into it, I think it's telling about how similar you and I are mm-hmm. and the fact that we had not discussed this list with each other.
No.
And yet, for both of our number one movies, we picked incredibly weird mm-hmm. romantic movies that starred comedic actors
yeah.
in serious roles, but they were just opposite ends of the spectrum, whereas Punch Drunk deals with the greatness and the falling in love. Mm-hmm. Eternal Sunshine deals more with the bullshit and the falling out of love. And
yeah.
It's just... But I think that's so, like, we are kindred spirits, Ryan. Mm-hmm. And that's more focused, like, I'm so glad we have this show together, because we are the same, but we are also different.
Mm-hmm.
And we bring different viewpoints. And I think our number one movies illustrate that point so perfectly. And I love that, because we had not discussed any part of this, and that's what we both chose. So.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like, I think you put it perfectly. Punch Drunk Love is, I think, a lot more optimistic and hopeful, because it is that falling in love period. And Eternal Sunshine's like, what happens, like, you know, after the meet cute, like 5 years down the line, where's that couple that you see in Hollywood movies, and what's happening? Like, what are the struggles? And that's what I really, really love about this film, is I think it feels more earnest and vulnerable
yeah.
than most films, because it's not afraid to show you like the really bad parts of relationships. Like, there's also some incredible parts. And I mean, I could talk about like that real quick, is I think the film is also incredibly structured, because the movie kind of starts off with the bad parts of the relationship. Like, as he's going back and erasing the memories of Clementine, Joel is, from his mind, you're seeing all the bad stuff first.
Yeah.
And then you slowly start to get the good stuff. And so you're left with like these really good memories. And so like you, like the audience, like Joel as a character, you're both wanting to like stop the erasing. Like you, and that's the ultimate point of this movie, is you learn, you know, good and bad, like those memories are needed. You need that to move on. You need that to learn. Like,
yeah.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is a negative quote. Like, I don't think it's a positive quote.
I don't think anything in this movie is positive, really.
Yeah.
Well, and this, yeah. One of my points I want to bring up here is I watched, the DVD I watched has a quote from Peter Travers of Rolling Stone, and I wrote this down because
oh, yeah.
It is the most jarring thing, and I don't, like, he's a movie reviewer for Rolling Stone. I actually took a picture of the front of the DVD and tweeted it at him and said, what the fuck are you talking about?
Did you watch this movie?
Because I this is it in full. This is what he says about it. It is a smart, sexy, and seriously funny comedy. At what point in this movie is it a seriously funny comedy? Anytime I've watched this movie, I don't laugh.
I have chuckles. I have chuckles at some of the lines, but it's...
It's not, I mean, I'll give him it's smart.
Yeah.
It's not sexy. It is not a seriously funny comedy at any point. Like, I would not, that's not how you would market this movie at all.
I'd argue the stuff with Elijah Wood's funny.
I think it's more sad and awkward.
It's awkward, but I think there's humor in that. Him talking to Mark Ruffalo about stealing the panties and it's like, I don't understand why women don't like me. Well, maybe if you'd stop stealing their panties, like, I think there is humor there. It's just not like, I think that's a bad quote.
Because it's terrible, right?
It does make it seem like Dodgeball or Anchorman. Like, it's not that kind of comedy.
I'm just going with that because Jim Carrey's in this, and like they're hoping to sucker some retard that's just like looking at movies to be like, oh, Jim Carrey, funny comedy, I'm going to buy this.
I think it is. Like, that's, in all honesty, if this is a comedy with quotation marks, like the kind of comedy you drink, like, or you'd watch, like, with drinking wine. Like, it's a sophisticated comedy where you're just giving it a chuckle here and there, but that is it. Like, maybe that guy didn't know how to process.
Also, does...
I had a similar reaction, sorry.
Go ahead, yeah.
With Stranger Than Fiction when that came out. Like, I really love that movie. It's also Will Ferrell being serious.
Yeah.
And he has a moment where, like, he's crying, realizing he's going to have to kill himself in order for other people to have like a happy life and a happy ending at the very end of the movie. I'm not going to tell you if he lives or dies or whatever, but like he starts crying. He has like this really earnest crying scene. The audience I was with was laughing because I don't think they know how to process it. And I think maybe that's what happened here because Jim Carrey is not funny in this movie. Like, he's not doing like silly faces.
Again,
he's not doing anything.
Very similar to Adam Sandler. I think this is some of Jim Carrey's best work in this movie.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
He fucking destroys in this movie. I wrote down another one. He's so good at playing awkward and just nervous, and he's so fidgety. And it's those subtle little physical acting things that actually really bring a lot and bring the Joel character to life. That, in a way, I would have no idea Jim Carrey could ever do that. But man, that dude is fucking killer in this role. So
yeah, I agree completely.
I also does Elijah Wood have the same virus that Keanu Reeves has where they just do not age?
Oh,
because Elijah Wood has looked like 16 as long as I've known about Elijah Wood.
Maybe it's his sideburns in this movie, but he looked exceptionally young in this movie.
Yeah, like really young. And this movie came out after he'd done all the Lord of the Rings stuff.
Yeah, I think so.
They filmed all three of those like in one big go. So, I mean,
he looks just as young in Wilford, too.
Yeah,
like
he does not age. Yeah. Just like Keanu Reeves, dude. That guy looks like Ted still.
Dude, Judd Hirsch, too. Like,
yeah.
So that Independence Day trailer looks like complete garbage, but it's hilarious seeing Judd Hirsch, Jeff Goldblum's father, look the exact same as the first Independence Day, and Bill Pullman has aged like 40 years.
He still looks like he did in fucking Taxi.
Yeah, he does.
Like, it's like, oh.
He does.
Oh, that's the dude from Taxi. He looks exactly the same.
That's, you gotta be doing whatever they're doing, killing whatever.
I don't know.
Sacrifice they're doing.
Are they sacrificing
blood
infants?
Rituals. That's what it is.
Tell us, Elijah Wood, Keanu Reeves, and Judd Hirsch. Let us in.
Hashtag blood rituals. Fuck.
I wanna be forever young. I've derailed this. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I think that's podcast close at that. That's
forever
the ender.
Forever young. I want to be forever young. All right. Continue, please. Let me stop singing.
Well, I don't remember where we were. What were we talking about here?
I've given mad props to Jim Carrey.
Yes. Yeah. He does. All right. So his Joel character is very awkward and nervous and timid, and it is like a very nuanced performance he does, but it's also very likable. I still like his character for the most part. There are things he does I don't agree with. Like, there are fights later on that he has, and he says stuff there. He crosses a line.
Are you talking about you fuck people to make them like you?
Yeah, and I specifically wrote down that quote,
but
because,
like,
that is damning, but like in a relationship fight,
you're gonna
sometimes
drop that.
You resort to that.
Yeah, exactly. It's totally truthful and honest.
Which goes back to, again, like, there are good parts, but there are also bad, horrible parts of relationships that people don't talk about, especially in Hollywood movies.
I've had fights with girlfriends like that.
Yeah.
Where It's like, oh, you're just a dumb fucking whore. Why do I even care about you? Mm-hmm. Things, you know, things that as soon as you say them,
yeah.
And even Jim Carrey, as soon as he says it, he's like, I should not have said that. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
And
please.
You know,
we've all been there.
You just get caught up in the moment, and you
want to hurt them.
One up cycle, yeah.
Okay, and you want to hurt them, and then when you do hurt them, you immediately because you still care about them deeply. And great writing.
It
great
is
directing.
It's my problem with this movie, or the problem I had watching this movie again, was I'm trying to take down notes for the podcast, and it just was going to be like 30 different quotes that I love from this movie. I was like, that's not good enough. I have to go back and actually like dig deep and stuff. But
no quotes really jumped out to me.
Oh my god, there's so much. They actually have a sand line on an equivalent of Attack of the Clones. Like, I hate sand. Ooh, whatever.
His line is so much better.
Really.
And I almost wrote that down. Like, I was like,
I don't see
this
what,
is how you talk about sand.
I don't
it's
see
just
what
a bunch of
little
rocks.
Yeah. It's just a bunch of little rocks.
I know.
Like, it's that kind of cynicism and like negativity. Like, I hate to say it. I fucking think that way. Like, I think that way. And so like every little thing he says is like that. He has so many lines talking about like his awkwardness. It's like, I have felt that. I have lived that. That's all there. And oh man, just I appreciate this movie even more now that I met my wife, because my wife is really, really close to Clementine.
I could absolutely agree with that.
And I think I love that because it's true. Like at one point, like they get into a fight because she's kind of brash and impulsive, and he says things he doesn't mean. But like as he's going through the memories, he's like, that's what I've always loved about you, is that you're just impulsive, and like
she brings that out of him. And even though he brings out the boringness in her, and it's a balance.
Yeah.
But I could definitely see that about your wife, Laura. She's strong-headed.
Yep.
And very, and I'm just trying to think of the right way to say it. I know it's
a hard line to walk.
Well, not that it's bad. I want to give credit to Laura, because I could definitely see her being very similar to Clementine.
Absolutely.
She's very opinionated, but in a good way. Mm-hmm. She speaks her mind, and she's honest, and that's everything Clementine is.
Yeah, and she's, through her, she's pushed me to way step outside
my
personal bubble. And that's, I kind of appreciate that.
I think she's one of the big reasons that you stepped up and did the wrestling episode.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah.
Without her, I don't think you would have done it.
No, I absolutely would not.
So, thank you for that, Laura. But I think that's good that people need somebody like that. And
yeah.
On the opposite end, I think I'm more that way for Mandy. I think in my, I'm very similar to Laura.
Yeah.
Where I'm very outgoing and I like weird and awkward, silly things. And Mandy's more like you. She's very restrained and very safe. And again, that's what a good relationship is. It's opposites attract, man. I mean, on a base level.
It is. And that's, I think, what this movie is positing, is that opposites do attract. And that's, I don't know how much of the narrative we've given away and if people are completely lost or not. But Joel and Clementine, just in case you haven't seen this movie, and if you haven't, you should.
You really should.
Joel and Clementine were lovers. They had a fight. Clementine goes to Lacuna, which is this specialty doctor that I guess specialize in erasing your memories. And I love that line where
he's like an optometrist specializes in eyes, a dentist,
I love
a tooth.
Joel talks to the doctor and he's just like, so is there any chance of brain damage? And he's like, well, I mean, it is brain damage.
Yeah,
but
I love that.
Nothing like a heavy night of drinking or anything.
Yeah, it's on par with a heavy night of drinking. Yeah. What I loved about it is like, was the, what I'm, ragamuffin is the word that's coming, but that's not right. But just, you would think for a company that specializes in erasing minds, like that's monumental. You can and not erasing minds completely, just specific points you don't want to remember. But yet this place runs out of like a rundown little doctor's office.
Yeah.
All of their equipment is very band-aided together or scrapped together. It's very hodgepodge and it's just, I like that aspect of it. It's homegrown. Maybe is what I'm looking at. It's not professional. It's not clean and crisp that you would expect something on technological level like this to be.
Well, everything feels very lived in. It feels like it would actually exist in this world. It's not like a Total Recall remake where everything is like bright, shiny, and glossy and
or
perfectly
RoboCop
clean.
Or RoboCop as well.
Yeah, like those where they take like this near future and they just like really clean it up. And it's like, it wouldn't be like that.
And that's another thing, you know, it's subtleties. And that's what I love this movie because of its subtleties. Mm-hmm. Both Joel and Clementine's apartments look like lived in real apartments.
They do.
It's not thrown together for an audience. Like, that looks like people live in these places. And that's a nice touch. It helps suspend that disbelief and get you just into it. It's it's all set dressing, but very well done.
Yeah, and both of the apartments really reflect the characters, too. Like, yeah. They did a very good job with the set design, because you can see Joel's apartment, and you're like, I get it. Mm-hmm. I get his character now. Mm-hmm. And it's a small touch that you wouldn't have to do in other movies, but they do.
I like, just because you're a little rambling. Another touch that I like to really set different timelines, easy enough, change the color of Clementine's hair.
Yes.
You can tell what period things are happening based on the color of her hair. And it goes through, I think there's red, blue, green, and there's another one, I think. Maybe purple, maybe not purple.
I think it's just red, blue, and green.
Is it just red? I thought there was or one orange, more. Oh, no. But it's just brown. It's like a natural hair color. That shows up, too.
I don't remember that. I remember green, orange, and blue specifically.
I think there's definitely brown that shows up.
That's the timeline. It starts off green, then it's orange, and then blue. And blue is one of the first ones you see because it's at the very end of the
exactly.
movie.
Exactly. But which is the beginning. Very Tarantino-esque flip-you around.
Yes, which I think is fun and fine because it makes the narrative more interesting because you're starting to piece together things. And then when like the joke about her name, like, oh, my darling Clementine, don't you say anything about it. Like the reason that at the very beginning of the movie, he doesn't know is because he erased it and he erased her from her mind. So he wouldn't know. And like,
and that's one of the last memories that he erases, which is my favorite part of the movie.
Is that final memory? I love that memory too, where he's at the beach house. Right?
And so the entire movie, he has a bit of, I'm going to say, buyer's remorse. About a quarter to halfway in, he doesn't want to erase Clementine, even because he got into it because she erased him, and he just was angry about it. And he's like, "Well, fuck it, I'll erase her too. I don't need her." But then halfway through, decides he doesn't want to do that. He wants to keep Clementine in his memory, good or bad, no matter how much it hurts. So he starts running through and trying to take Clementine to different memories and hiding her there.
Yeah.
And
it becomes almost like an action movie. Like he's trying to run away from the erasing process in his head.
But they keep finding where he takes her, and they still get the memories. And I think that's also kind of sad because you have to imagine that it erases that memory too. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's doing even more damage because not only is Clementine gone, but that part of his childhood that he took her to is also just gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, at the very end, when it's their first meeting at the beach house, and she says, "This is it. This is the last one. What are we going to do?" And he just tells her, "Let's enjoy it. It's beautiful."
That's all good.
Man. It's beautiful.
Everything about that one scene is beautiful and just resonates so deeply with me. Like she says, "Can I borrow a piece of chicken?" And she takes a chicken leg and he says something to the effect of like, she just took it from me. It was so intimate. It was like we were already married. And it's like, I've had that before where it's like you do like a small gesture like that, like an impulsive girl would do to me. It's like, we're done. Like, that's it. Like, we're star-crossed lovers. Like, we are destined now. And like, you just get that hope up. And I love, she's going upstairs to get the drink and he's getting nervous and he was like, "I just left," and she's like, "Why'd you leave?" "Because I was scared." It's like, "You didn't tell me that." And it's just these small, gosh, honest character moments, just like I love because you don't see these in the 99% of rom-coms that you've mentioned.
See, and again, I don't call it, this is not a rom-com, man. This is a
no.
I would call this a romedy. It's a romantic drama.
Dramedy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a rama.
Yeah.
It's a rama.
It's a rama. It's a romantic drama. There's no comedy, man. I don't.
Yeah.
It's an unfair justification to try to lump this movie into that. It's because it's not, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah. I think there's more comedy than you're giving it credit for. Like when he goes as baby Joel under the table, like I think there's comedic stuff there.
I mean, it's,
I think it's very French comedy. It's,
yeah,
it's
maybe. I could
it's
see
Michel
that.
Gondry's comedy, which he does in other movies.
I like that part. And again, you know, what I like about this movie is its heavy reliance on practical effects.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of CG at all.
I think the CG is like Elijah Wood's head turning and you keep seeing the back of his head.
That's
like,
CG.
No matter how his head turns.
The blank faces is actually CG.
Is it? It's not a prosthesis.
No, that's actually, what's his face? Not Spike Jonze. Who's the other director?
Michel Gondry?
Not Michel Gondry.
Charlie Kaufman.
I think, no, maybe it is Michel Gondry.
Michel Gondry is the director.
Yeah.
The other three are all three of them are writers.
That's actually his knee.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I saw it was really lumpy.
Yeah.
This time.
Yeah. That's his
it's
knee.
It's his knee. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's not
disgusting.
Prosthesis.
No, they just plop the knee on there. Isn't that crazy?
It is absolutely crazy. just ew.
But yeah, that all the different practical effects, again, to show the fuzzy memories. And I think that's a big Spike Jonze thing.
Yeah, it's Spike Jonze and Michel Gondry, because Michel Gondry also did The Science of Sleep. And if you've seen that, it's not anywhere near as good as Eternal Sunshine.
I have not seen it.
But it is as creative. Like, it's incredible, some of the stuff he does visually. And he does that in a lot of his movies. Like, Be Kind Rewind, the scenes where they're making the movies. Like, he is a ball of creativity, but without, like, Spike Jonze or Charlie Kaufman as writing, he kind of loses it.
And Spike Jonze just, man, that guy, he's got such great, like...
I love Spike Jonze.
I do too, man.
Her could have easily been in my top five, too.
Her, also, he did...
Being John Malkovich.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Such a great, weird movie. And that...
Malkovich.
Eternal Sunshine are also... They have a very weird kind of overlap thing going.
I think...
They're very similar.
I don't know if Charlie Kaufman was part of Being John Malkovich. I think he might be.
Almost. I would almost bet.
Because it's this, it's really this sad world he makes. And you can see it in everything he touches. And Being John Malkovich is equally kind of sad and depressing because it's not a happy ending for John Cusack.
No. Oh, no. One. Oh, no.
Yeah.
And also, I think we'll diverge here. That is the best Cameron Diaz movie, her performance-wise.
Oh, okay. As for performance,
let me tighten that down.
It's like, I really like Charlie's Angels and
There's
Something
fun
About Mary, but
performance wise,
yeah, I'll give you that. She's never been better in a movie.
Exactly. Yeah. She's actually gotten worse. I feel
she was in Fear and Loathing, so that would be the your best Cameron Diaz movie.
See, but it's not. I don't think she's great in that.
And she just shows up.
Yeah, it's so tiny. But like, she's gotten worse. Like, I don't know if you saw. I did not like her at all in Gangs of New York. I thought she was completely miscast in that movie.
I've seen Gangs of New York. I don't even remember her. That's how little of an impression she made on me.
She's completely miscast and totally out of the element, I feel. When you're partnered up with not only Daniel Day-Lewis, but also Leo DiCaprio, and she's like also...
I'd throw in John C. Reilly in there too, because he's a powerhouse actor that nobody gives him credit for.
See, and that's... I love when comedic actors do things outside of that wheelhouse, and when they can do it. And that's... We've discussed... That's the fourth one we've brought up. It's Adam Sandler, which do more, dude. You never listen to this. You never will, but do more. You're fucking great.
We expect much more than the ridiculous six out of
Jim Carrey, Will Ferrell, and John C. Reilly. Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly together? Comedic fucking genius.
So good.
But they're also such great in these deeper roles. They have range, man, and I love to see people explore that range. I think I said it at the beginning.
You got a John C. Reilly shirt on right now.
I do. From
I wonder if he came up subliminally in my head looking at your shirt.
Maybe.
That's why I said it.
He's also in River Runs Through It.
Oh, really?
Or no. What's the movie? It's Kevin Bacon.
It's probably A River Runs Through It. That's Kevin Bacon.
Where he's like a bank robber.
I have not seen this movie you're talking about, but I think it's A River Runs Through It.
Who's the chick? It's Meryl Streep, and they're like whitewater rafting, and...
That's A River Runs Through It.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
With Kevin Bacon and John C. Reilly are like bank robbers, and they kidnap Meryl Streep because she's a whitewater rafter instructor, and they have to get down the river. It was a 90s...
It sounds like a 90s movie.
It was very 90s, but it was fun. But again, it's John C. Reilly.
It was a 90s and blank statement. That's perfect. It sounds like it kidnaps a whitewater instructor.
Again, I'm researching this movie back to Eternal Sunshine.
Yes.
A lot of the weird memory effects they did, they just used a kind of an old broken camera and just did different things with that to give it a more fuzzy thing. One of the things I really liked, and it's so simple, I knew it immediately, but it does well. There's a scene where it's Joel and Clementine, and then Clementine is just behind like a sheet of plastic, but it makes it look fuzzy, and it's just... Again,
I noticed that too on this. There was a similar effect. I think it's after Joel has the big fight with Clementine, or like maybe he learns about the Lacuna erasing him from her mind. But he gets out of his car, and there's a shot of him walking among people on the street, and they're like whited out, like much so. Like it might be like the plastic kind of plastic wrap really just fuzzying them out, like he's so disconnected from the world at that moment.
Yeah.
Which is a great effect, and it's very smart.
It works so well on film.
I think here, so we mentioned Michelle Gondry's like other stuff being very creative. Like, I think it all serves a purpose here. Like, every choice he makes works for that scene and works symbolically and thematically. Like, yeah. It's not just like, look at this cool effect. It is needed.
It's because most of this movie takes place in Joel's mind while Joel is asleep. And so it really emphasizes the fuzzy and jumpy around of every memory. And things are all somewhat disconnected a lot of times. And again, it's the subtle things, like when he's talking to Clementine in his mind at the bookstore the first time he met her, and like the titles of the books, everything's sort of whiting out, and it's just that memory on the verge of being erased. It's coming in, and
there's several shots like on the street too, and like all the signs in the windows are backwards
or blank.
Yeah. And it's just this, it's what your memory would be. It's just not quite perfect.
It's not there's a detail. You don't that care.
Wrong. Yeah. And it's, oh God, it's so good.
Yeah. It's but really well done.
That scene where they meet in the library after their first date, or after the beach house, I guess, they do something really smart with this character, because as we're describing Joel, like we've said, Joel is that kind of mopey inward character who's I hesitate to say, but it's kind of Woody Allen like, but not annoying. He's likable.
Not narcissistic.
Yeah.
And not...
Jim Carrey plays it in a way that it makes the character real. And
exactly.
And you like him.
And that's the best thing. And
you're rooting for
him. He is real in this. He's grounded.
Yes. And Clementine could have been the manic pixie dream girl that you see in like Garden State with Natalie Portman, or you see as Kirsten Dunst in Elizabethtown. Just like the girl who comes in and fixes the broken man with her crazy out there attitude and just going to change him for the better. And that's not this.
No, Clementine is also grounded. Yes. She's just a chick, man.
She has a line that I fucking love.
I know what you're going to say, but
I know.
Please say it.
I wrote it down because I just love it so much. She's like, I'm not a concept, Joel. I'm not going to save your life. I'm just a fucked up girl looking for my own peace of mind. So right there, like middle fingers to anybody like who's wanting like this manic pixie dream girl kind of bullshit. That's not Clementine. I love that.
That's not Clementine. That's not anybody. That is. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. That is everybody. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody.
We all are
person.
Clementine. We're not gonna fix you. We're just a fucked up thing trying to find our own way.
But the,
you want to join
brutally
me?
Brutally honest thing. There is Joel then says, like, I did, even though you, that was a great speech, I remember it, I still thought you were going to save my life. And I think we've all felt that way. Yeah. I know I have anyway, but.
But she doesn't, and just like she said she would. Yeah. And I think that's part of Joel's realization at a point that she wasn't what he meant. And again, it's
he
unfair.
He made her out to be
her.
Something he,
again,
she was
that's
never going
to
be.
Fair to her, but he ends up holding it against her, I feel.
Yeah, no,
which is
that
a great
was
thing.
The big rift between them. And so,
well, it's a slow build, and you get hints of it throughout what eventually brings it on.
There's a it's I think for me seeing it, I think it's that, like we just talked about, but it's also the vastly different personalities and both of them refusing to meet in the middle.
Yeah.
But the end, I mean, there's many more touches we can talk about, but like I'm very interested in the ending, because earlier on in the podcast you said you don't see this as a happy movie in the slightest bit. After they get their memories erased of each other, they find each other one again. Is that fate? Is that happy? Do you think this is going to be a happy ending after the movie rolls on? Like, do you think they're going to stay together? Like, what is your interpretation of the ending?
My interpretation is that, like all relationships, it takes work. I mean, sometimes they don't work out. Sometimes you get a second chance. That doesn't mean it's going to be easy. It's not going to be smooth sailing, but hopefully... I've always hoped that they listen to the tapes and maybe realize some things. Because before they erase your memory, the Lacuna place makes you record on a cassette tape why you want to erase this person and all the things about them that makes you want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirsten Dunst's character had fallen in love with the head doctor.
That's so tragic.
And had her mind erased once and remembered it when she fell in love with the doctor again.
Mm-hmm.
And in retaliation, she goes back. She's the receptionist. She goes back to the office and takes everybody's file and mails them their copy of their tape, which I think is a beautiful thing. I love that. And I disagree with Lacuna. I would never erase anybody from my mind. I don't feel.
Oh, I do too. And I think I think that's all of those three filmmakers we talked about. I think that's their intention too.
Yeah.
Is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is a quote that's brought up by Alexander Pope. And it's not Pope Alexander. it's not a good quote. Like, I think Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is a kind of negative thing, saying like you're doomed to repeat your same mistakes if you get rid rid of all the good. And like, it's essentially like ignorance is bliss, but then you don't learn from it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the ending is, you know, getting rid of all the stuff is not good. Like, because Kirsten Dunst makes the same mistakes again.
Exactly.
Joel and Clementine are on the verge of making the same mistake again. But maybe, maybe since they have their histories on the tapes, that they have all these opinions and issues, maybe they can work on through it.
Yeah, together.
And you know? So, happy ending? Maybe.
Again, you know, I don't think that it's not a happy ending. My big complaint with it is that at certain point they try to sell it as a comedy, and I just don't.
Oh, it's not comedy. No.
I don't see that at all, man. Mm-hmm. This movie is one of the saddest movies I've seen, and I feel like
I love sad movies.
Yeah, but I mean, it really works on you. It takes you through a trip, man. Mm-hmm. And it's not always good, but
no.
It makes you think. And that's what I think good art. I think this movie is art, and it's good, mm-hmm. and that it makes you investigate yourself. Like, mm-hmm. it makes you look internally at yourself, like, yeah. Well, fuck, have I done things like this? And like, yeah, and it's good in that way. Like, mm-hmm. it is a big budget. Well, I don't think it's big budget. I think it's Focus Features, and Focus Features is definitely smaller.
They used to be known for, like, really quality stuff. I don't think, especially in the mid-2000s when this came out, like, you'd see Focus Features, and like, this is going to be good.
Yeah, and I agree.
I think they've slipped recently.
Bring it back, Focus Features.
Yeah.
Listen to this podcast. But no, yeah, and I think, it's things like that, you know, like Jim Carrey. He's a huge movie star. You mm-hmm. know he took a pay cut to be in this movie.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to be in this movie. Kate Winslet. We haven't said him much.
Was she big at that time? Because I know she had Titanic.
Yeah, she had Titanic. I think everything Kate Winslet is in, she's one of those that's just eponymous. Like, she is fucking great in everything.
Oh, I agree. But I just don't know if she was, like, demanding, like, the big paycheck that Jim Carrey
I don't
was.
Think, I don't think anybody. Jim Carrey is a monumental. He's easily the biggest star in this movie, still to this day.
He is, though there are a lot of
There are a lot of actors.
Yeah, like David Cross pops up, and I forget about David Cross every single time.
I want to ask you about that. What do you think David Cross and his girlfriend represent in this movie?
Oh, man.
Because at no point are they a good representation of a couple.
No.
But they stay together, they get along.
I think they're the compromise couple. Like, yeah. It's because I think in Charlie Kaufman's viewpoint, every relationship has to have these moments of just hating the other person in that relationship. And it's just how you deal with that and how you move on is whether it's successful or not. Because I think there gets to be a point where, like, I mean, maybe it's going to make me unpopular to say it, but you can't stand the other person you're living with in the relationship. Like, there will just be like small little things that happen, or it's just like you get to the point where it's like, because you don't have your alone time, you don't have anything anymore, where you just like, you need space. And it's just how you deal with that, whether it's you changing how you are, how you react to something, or like, you know,
leaving it in and building it up till it explodes,
which is not the right thing to do at all.
No, absolutely not. But it happens more often than not, I feel.
Yes.
I think that, I don't know if there's supposed to be an indication of where Joel and Clementine could be.
I think Charlie Kaufman is positing as that's a successful relationship.
I could see that,
warts and all. I don't know if that's where they're going to end up being or not, but I think
those
they're
two,
the role model.
They are incredibly honest, mm-hmm. and they don't hide. But they're also, it's weird to feel, I don't ever feel like the giddy love from those two characters. But I don't think we're supposed to. I think they're established in this role. We're understand that they've been together for a long time.
Yeah.
That's my assumption.
It could be. Maybe they're the negative relationship. Like, they are what is kind of fueling Joel to be negative in his relationship, possibly. Like, because that's all we see him see is just like these small little fights and tiffs between those two.
Yeah.
That it manifests in Joel. And maybe it's a commentary on that, like surrounding yourself with other like-minded couples. Like, if you surround yourself with a couple that fights, then you're gonna bring some of that into your relationship and fight. I don't know. I'm reaching out. I've never thought about David Cross's relationship since you brought up. Like, it's
that's something that's like, always because they're there for a reason.
They have to be, but
I don't know the reason, and I've always wondered if it's just surface level, like what you and see it on, or if there's something deeper. And I didn't know if you had ever picked up on anything. So.
I've never picked up anything deeper.
Okay.
I always just laugh when David Cross comes on screen and complains or is just randomly working a birdhouse, and that's
trying to build my fucking birdhouse here.
But that's what I took from the David Cross relationship. Okay. No, I'm not taking anything more.
So it's just overall, like, visually, this is an absolutely gorgeous movie. And I talked earlier about the similarities in our first choices. And I feel it reigns true here, too. Like, Punch Drunk Love is visually just fucking beautifully shot. And every scene and every angle has purpose. This movie's the exact same way. But the difference is I think that Punch Drunk is very script reliant, whereas I know just from research that Eternal Sunshine, there was a whole multitude of improv going on during each take.
It feels like it.
And you can tell, and I think that that adds to it too, that that gives it a naturalness and a livability to it. I know that the cameramen for the movie were also French cameramen. And so during takes, Michel would give directions to the cameraman in French so that he would not interrupt the actors as they were delivering their performances in English, so that he could tell them to, you know, move to this angle and angle. And it wouldn't interrupt, like the actors had no idea what he was saying, so they couldn't play to the camera that way. So it gave it these natural flowing angles. It's just great director, I think. And it,
yeah.
A nice benefit of having a dual language.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. But
yeah.
I think that could also come back as a negative possibly. Like, I wonder, have you seen Be Kind, Rewind?
Yeah.
Okay, so your reaction is the reaction of the general public when they saw that movie.
Yeah.
I wonder if maybe that's the same issue there. He refused to step in and did, like, the French thing there, too. And maybe that barrier did not work out so well for that movie.
Well, and I also wonder, you know, about the caliber of actor that he's working with in comparison to the two movies.
That's true. Jack Black and Mos Def, like, I'm rooting
exactly.
for them. I want them to pull, like, out that win.
They're great actors in their rights, and Jack Black can do fantastic things, but in the comparison to a Kate Winslet or a Jim Carrey.
I even say Mark Ruffalo.
Ruffalo, Elijah Wood, Kirsten Dunst, who plays the doctor. I
should have wrote down his name.
He's great too. He's an older guy.
It's Tom something.
So the scene where, like, his wife catches him with Kirsten Dunst is, again, that's heartbreaking scene.
It's heartbreaking, man. But I love everything about that scene.
Yeah.
Everything about that scene.
And I don't, I mean, I guess it is kind of shitty, but it's not like, I don't know, man. It's a weird scene. Like,
it's a weird scene that's,
it's very,
I think,
truthful.
It's needed.
Yeah, it's very, it's truthful needed. And it's very honest. Like,
because if you're hammering home the point that getting rid of your memories is a bad thing, you need that scene, because that is a perfectly clear example of not learning from your mistakes, making the same mistakes, and ruining a marriage.
Yeah,
like, that's, it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
But I love, like, the line the wife says, like, you can have him, you already have, and
she's like, what?
Yeah. Kirsten, and that kind of spurns it on. But I think it's a great scene. Another scene I really like that I kind of wish they would explore more, but it's okay they don't, is when Joel goes the very first time to erase his memories of Clementine. In the waiting room of Lacuna, he sees a woman with a box called Buster, with, like, a dog bowl and, like, dog toys, and she's erasing, like, the dog, and, like, there's a man to his right that has, like, a box of trophies. And I'm just very curious, like, and it's really great in the movie, because Joel, like, is very curious and very, like, inquisitively looking over, like, the other's, like, boxes of stuff and, like, kind of snooping and spying, and, like, that's how I am as a viewer. I'm like, I want to know their story. What's up with them? Like, what is he trying to erase? Like, what's all that about? Like, I think that's a very interesting thing. It's just, like, 30 seconds of the film that didn't have to be devoted to that, but it's like a thing, like, you would see that in an office that would erase memories. It wouldn't all just be, like, sappy love stuff and getting rid of an ex-lover. It would be like a woman losing a dog or something, and maybe that kid lost a child. I want to know what's happening there, and I think it's a great scene.
Well, and I think it also, again, it's the subtlety, and the, again, this movie has a lot of that, and a lot of it's the little details. I think Joel is great sitting in an awkward waiting room, which we've all sat in. It's like, you are sitting in a waiting room and you're like, fuck, what's wrong with that guy? Or shit, what's this chick bringing?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She looks like crap. Like, what the fuck? Like, things like that. It's those little details that really pick this movie up for me. You know, did you see this movie in theaters?
I did.
I did,
I saw
too.
It twice, I think.
In theater. Wow. Mm-hmm. I went on a date with a girl to see it, and we had a good time.
Yeah, I was also not on a date, but it was the girl I was going to eventually wind up with for a little while, and she did not understand the movie at all and didn't like it at all. And this was always a niggling thing in my side that I couldn't let go, because
I could see that
if you don't understand this movie, like, we what can't is wrong with be you? Together. Yeah. Like, it's... not even, like, you don't have to, like, love and appreciate and adore it like I do, but, like, if you can't get any of, like, the deeper concepts here, like, we're doomed.
Well, and that's I don't think this movie as a whole is that deep. I mean, it pretty Ooh. Much... Well,
it's, all right.
No, so and I'm maybe saying that, yeah. It's. I mean, there is depth to it, but, like, gotcha. On a whole, like, it clearly explains everything it's trying yeah. to show to
it's
you.
It's not like Pan's Labyrinth where, like, there are different meanings yeah, for things.
Exactly.
No.
On that
it's
level.
Not that. Yeah it's not that.
I mean, it is a deep movie in the fact of everything that it's dealing with and showing. But
yes, I think it's weighty. Yeah. It's very blunt, but it's weighty.
Yes.
It's
thank weighty. You. That's
there's,
much better
There's a lot to digest. You don't have to, like, so, unravel a mystery. It's just, it's there, but, like,
yes.
you have to wade through, like, a lot of heavy truths.
But so somebody that couldn't even pick up on that, I totally agree
and
with you.
Yeah.
And I've had movies like that too with people where it's mm-hmm. like, wait, you don't get that? What are you fucking talking about here? Yeah.
I'm going to talk about Laura one more time.
Yeah, go ahead.
But this was when Laura and I met, we were in Korea teaching and we were out at a bar one night drinking and they had a rooftop access where you could go on the roof. And her and I stayed up there for like 5 hours until like 5 a.m. talking about everything. But like, this was the movie we bonded over was Eternal Sunshine.
You guys talked about it?
We were talking about movies and we just like were like, what's your favorite movie? 3, 2, 1, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
So this
Mind.
Is Laura's like, favorite movie too?
This is also her favorite
movie. Wow, okay, I didn't know that.
And immediately I was like, I'm gonna have a connection here. Whether like it moves on to anything else or not is whatever, but like she knows.
Something's gonna happen here.
We can have deep conversations about stuff. That's like tight. I can relate to this woman.
See, Mandy had never seen Punch Drunk before I showed it to her for this podcast.
What did she think?
Oh, I think I told she really, really loved it.
That's
she,
great.
She enjoyed every minute of it. She's like, wow, I really enjoyed that. It's funny that you and Laura bonded over that way. When Mandy and I had our first hangout, again, I've said she's very similar to you. We didn't actually go out on a date. Mm-hmm. I just kind of went over to, she was living with her mom at the time. I went over to her mom's house. We were going to watch a movie. And it's just, it's very similar. It's a great, I guess, footnote on our history and our relationship. And that nothing worked out. And what I mean by this, like, we were going to watch what I thought was the Zodiac movie starring Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, yeah.
But the movie we picked on the cable renter box, it said Zodiac. And I was like, oh, yeah, I've heard this movie's supposed to be good. Let's watch mm-hmm. this. It was some, like, it was one of those, like, shitty movies that they also released with a similar name to just capitulate and capitalize.
The David Fincher one is Zodiac, so it was probably, like, The Zodiac Killer.
Something like
something.
That. And it was just awful. It was bad. And we were, like, maybe 20 minutes into it. And I finally said, and again, this is the first time I've ever hung out with her. And I was like, I don't think this is the movie I had expected it to be. And so then we decided, well, because she was like, yeah, because this movie sucks. And I was like, yeah, it's really bad. So we decided to pick another movie. And the only other movie that I saw in there that looked somewhat interesting to me that I hadn't seen was Running with Scissors.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin's in that. And it's another one of those weird arty indie house films. But again, it's not a great first date movie.
I don't remember much about it. I remember it being kind of depressing.
It's very depressing. The kid's dad is a psychologist, and the kid... I had no idea anything about this movie. I just heard it was supposed to be kind of good, and I've always liked weird, arty indie flicks. It's my thing. So we watched it, and then the kid discovers that he's gay, and he goes through this whole understanding of being gay.
I don't remember that subplot at all.
He, like, falls in love with, like, his dad's gardener. Dude, and, like, the mom is, like... suicidal throughout the whole... Dude, it's so
I remember the suicidal
weird.
Mom.
Yeah, dude.
I remember that.
Again, not a great first date movie. So after that ended, I remember we stayed up, very similar to you, till 5 a.m. after this, but we just watched reruns of Legends of the Hidden Temple. And that's when I knew. I was like, this chick's all right.
If she watches my old Nickelodeon shows.
Well,
me.
We would take, at the beginning of each episode, it was great, because we'd both pick a team and decide who was going to win, and... It was fun.
It's
it was
adorable.
Cute. Yeah,
it's adorable.
It was great. So it's very similar. But my thing with Mandy is that I've always shown her movies. I am absolutely the film buff in this relationship, and I like to expose her to these things. And I'm glad that she hasn't seen a lot of things because I get to re-experience them, and I get to see her response to seeing them for the first time. So
yeah, I think Laura and I come equally from movies. Like, she shares stuff, I share stuff. It's about the same, but I get to share games with her.
Yeah,
because she already she's like, I play God of War, I play Zelda. Like, I like stuff. I was like, huh. But have you heard about a game called Shadow of the Colossus? Little did I know, 5 years later, she would play it and then hate it. Yeah. But nonetheless.
Yeah. That's what I love too. Like, it's pretty badass. Your wife has a Zelda t-shirt.
She does. She also has like a Zelda art book and a Zelda scarf. She has like a bunch of Zelda gear.
And you're married to her, and spoilers, experienced grand people, Ryan's never beat a Zelda game.
I have not.
Holy shit. I didn't know this till like 3 weeks ago.
They really don't interest me.
My mind was blown. But you love Beyond Good and Evil, which is a chick Zelda. And not like a Zelda game for chicks.
No, I mean, it's just a girl instead Jade, of Link.
Jade is Link. Like.
Yeah. I just liked how weird it was. I guess more Zelda, as I guess as weird as the bosses and lands and stuff goes, it seems kind of rote. It seems very mundane to me. Like,
I think that's because Zelda set the precedence.
And maybe that's why.
And now, like, it was one of those things where, like, you know, when Call of Duty got huge, mm-hmm. how many fucking FPSs did you see?
That's true.
But, like, Zelda was, and it's still massive to this day. Like, people talk about a new Zelda, people flip the fuck out.
I am definitely in the minority. I know. But it just, there was not the same surprise, like, going through Beyond Good and Evil. Like, oh, talking pig named Paige. I'm fucking into that. Oh, what's this weird fish thing with eyeballs? Like, I'm into fucking that. A hoverboat? I'm into that. Talking goats? Into that. Like, Zelda's like, ah, Goron, I know what to expect from there. Ah, Ganon, I know what to expect. Oh, there's probably going to be a water temple. Oh, there's probably going to be a fire temple. Oh, there's probably going to be... And, like, and I know so much about
what's
it already.
What's weird, too, like, for the most part, I'm with you there. Like, I definitely trend more sci-fi than I do fantasy.
Oh, absolutely.
Fantasy a lot of times bores me, but Zelda... Yes. I don't know, man. Zelda gets me. But anyways, we're really diverging here.
Yeah, we did. That's okay.
I think we did because I think we're at the end of this.
Oh, I think it's safe to say.
Do you, anything else you really want to bring up? You said you had like a bunch of quotes.
Oh, I do have a bunch of quotes. Oh, okay. All right. But, so if we're just going to listen to my quotes.
Yeah, let's do this.
All right. So this is a quote by, I want to say it's Joel. Babies are so clean and free. They're born pure. Adults just become a mess of sadness and phobias.
Fuck yeah, they do.
That's a great quote. Yep. I relate to that. Why do I fall in love with every woman who shows the least bit of attention to me?
Feel that.
I do that.
Feel that, buddy.
I think that might be all my quotes. I already sprinkled the other ones in throughout the episode.
One thing I did like about this movie that I do with my own girlfriend, with Mandy, is that Clementine likes to lay out and look at constellations.
Yeah.
And before she had met me, I don't think Mandy ever did that. But especially when we lived at my mom's house and she had a backyard, we haven't done it so much here. But I love to just lay out and look at the stars, man. I really do. Like, cliche, whatever, call me that. I don't care. It's fucking fantastic to do that. My favorite constellation? Orion. I love looking at Orion. Orion is out right now. I guarantee you he's out.
There's a dirty joke there.
What is it? Hit me up.
That I'm just going to breeze past. Come on.
Orion.
Come on. Yeah, come on. Come on. Come on. You know it.
Fair enough.
I guess one other thing that I really like, it's a small little note. Joel and Clementine have this kind of cute, quirky way of playing with each other.
Where they suffocate each other.
They suffocate each other.
Oh, man, I love that too.
They smother each other with pillows.
I love that.
And it's like this weird, morbid thing that we fucking do. Like, we don't literally smother each other, but like, we'll roughhouse and play and like, be like, I'm gonna fucking kill you. And like, you just kind of like, you play because you feel safe. And like, the saddest thing is at the end of their relationship, like, he puts the ketchup packet on his neck and then lays on the floor because they're still doing this play thing. And she's like,
she just walks right over him.
She finds it obnoxious.
She steps right over it.
It's so heartbreaking.
What I love about that, too, the play killing, again, this ties back into my favorite movie, when they're in the hotel in Hawaii and Punch Drunk Love, and he's like, your face is so fucking cute. Yeah. I just want to smash it with a fucking sledgehammer. And she's like, I just want to claw your eyes out and rip your face off and eat it. And it's one of those, like, it's very similar. Like, man.
There's a cross section there. I didn't piece that together, but you're right. Yeah. It is. Yeah.
Dude, you and I are the same person, just different. Which is true.
Different spectrums, but the same.
Yeah. I love it. I love you, buddy. Let's cheers on this.
Cheers. Look at that audible clasp, because we did it.
We are clinking.
Clinking.
We are clinking. Andre clinking. California champagne. We'll go and wrap this up. I think this was a really good episode.
I think it was a good episode. I think it's a fantastic movie. What are your overall thoughts on the movie?
I've always liked this movie. It ranks up there, like, my number one movie was Punch Drunk, but there are two very similar and close movies to me in this very same genre vein. Mm-hmm. And one of them is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and the other one is Big Fish.
Yeah.
By Big Fish is fantastic. Tim Burton. It's the best thing
Tim Burton's done.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely, hands down. That movie is fucking amazing. And it was so hard for me to not put it on the list.
Yeah.
But I just felt it was so similar. And I would like to do an episode on it. Maybe it...
Oh, I'd be more than happy.
At some point. Because but you agree with me that it's very in the same wheelhouse, too.
It is. It's the kind of sad reality, but also...
Weird, quirky...
It's kind of hopeful, too. Like, if Punch Drunk Love is the very hopeful beginning of a relationship, Big Fish is like the middle ground. Mm-hmm. It's like the bridge between...
Absolutely.
The darkness of Eternal Sunshine and the lightness of Punch Drunk.
Yeah, it's... But yeah, so I forget what I was saying with it, but
your general thoughts on it. Like you're wrapping up. What do you think of Eternal Sunshine?
Of Eternal Sunshine. Yeah. Again, I've always liked this movie. Mm-hmm. I've always thought it was a great movie. I will watch it anytime. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not anytime because it's heavy.
It's I think you do have to be in a mood for it.
Yeah, it is heavy. Mm-hmm. It is not a comedy, but it's very well done. It's very well shot.
Peter Travers, be damned. It is not a comedy.
Yeah. Beautiful cinematography. There's great shots where they're on the beach and there's always snow on the beach. I love that, man. And
that scene bothered me because it's like, you don't know how much sand is getting in your clothes. And like, then I'm imagining like them walking around with the sand and it bothers me.
But I think that, again, that's probably a visual statement on relationships when they get into that bleak, ever expanding ocean, but it's cold and it's unforgiving. Good choice, man. Really good choice.
Well, thank you.
Again, I've said it 14 times on this, and I'll say it again. This really just shows how similar we are and how glad I am we're doing this podcast together, buddy.
How similar and how not different.
And how different, yeah.
Yeah. Not as different as similar, but...
But it really emphasizes that though we are similar, which we are, we agree a lot, we definitely have divergent viewpoints.
Agreed.
And I think that's great. I couldn't be happier. So,
buddy.
It's great. It's been a good experience so far. I look forward to where it's going, pal.
Absolutely.
I have nothing really else to say about it.
Okay. So it's my favorite movie, so yeah. I don't need to wrap it up.
Yeah,
I love it. You should watch it.
Yeah, you absolutely should watch this movie.
And really, if this is boring or it doesn't engage you, you can probably just stop listening to the podcast.
But if not, if you stuck around and you somehow... haven't found us on the multitude of places we are available
on
the web.
Many places you can find us, Kyle.
Go ahead. Please. Please give us where we can be found.
All right. You can find us at facebook.com/experiencegrindpodcast. Actually, that's a lie. It's just /experiencegrind. We are at like 98 likes. We are so close. We
just need fucking close.
Two more people to like us and then we'll be happy. Then we will never, never beg for viewers again. But like us there. You can find us at twitter.com/expgrindpodcast. Kyle is doing a fantastic job over there. And then we also have a Twitch stream.
Yes, which I'm looking up right now to make sure I get it right. It is twitch.tv/experiencegrind.
Pretty easy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the name of us. That's what we do. Just want to reemphasize, fucking shit, we have a fantastic name.
We have a fantastic name.
People are going to, someday somebody's going to be, wanting to be like, you know what? I should start this thing. Oh, Experience Grind would be a great name because I'm a big nerd and I like RPGs and, oh, man. Oh, shit, it's already taken. And I'm going to be like, fuck yeah, man. We took that because it is the best name.
That is when we will make our money by selling it to a more successful podcast.
Dude, I cannot wait to sell out. I will sell out in an instant. Pepsi Cola, Andre California Champagne, give us money.
That's right.
Anybody. I don't care.
Please like us on Facebook and give us money.
Yeah, but do like us on Facebook. We are so close to 100 likes. That would be great to get. Follow us on the Twitters, on Twitch if you like to watch me play video games. I play, if I'm playing now, I'm streaming. That's my new thing.
Awesome.
So whatever I'm playing, I'm going to be streaming, whether it be on my PS4 or PC.
Perfect. Is perfect.
Thank you guys, as always, for listening. We really appreciate all of you out there. Reach out to us. If you've got an idea for an episode, maybe you want to be a cool guest host and sit in with us and talk about it. We're open to that. We're really cool into anything. Talk to us. Reach out to us.
We are working on Skype and getting this integrated. So it is
Skype.
Doable.
Skype's going to be for a very special episode we have coming up. We're going to have our first Skype guest. I don't want to give too much away. But it's
Kevin Smith.
Oh, man.
It's not Kevin Smith.
Kevin Smith. Don't get people hyped up. I would fucking love to have Kevin Smith.
It's going to be me doing a really bad Kevin Smith impersonation.
Can you do one at all?
I'm Kevin Smith.
Blah, 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 blah. I'm Kevin Smith. I like to eat all kinds of burritos. That's my Kevin Smith. That's terrible.
That's pretty good.
He's
I
very
love
fat
that
man.
I love to eat burritos part. That's Not offensive in the slightest bit.
No, he's just fat.
So it's we got Tim Schafer is Captain Dickshit, and Kevin Smith is like a burrito machine.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, we'll just, yeah, fuck it, man. Who cares? That is. Here's one thing we haven't done for a while for our audience, you know. Fuck you. We haven't told the audience to get fucked for a while, man. You guys can eat a dick. I don't even care.
I hope we have like an anniversary episode where we can compile every single time you tell the audience to fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Fuck off, eat a dick, whatever, all of them.
We could have a 50-minute episode, which is just you saying fuck off to the audience.
That'll be an editing
nightmare.
Well, that'll be an editing experience for our lovely sound engineer Andrew.
Yes.
Let's give mad props to sound engineer Andrew. Thank you, as always, for everything
patiently
you do.
Patiently sitting around listening to us babble.
He runs the rails, people, I tell you. He rides them.
He rubs them and rides them?
I said runs, but he also rubs them. I mean, he caresses those sliders like a nice pair of nipples. Just
ugh.
Getting on it.
I don't know. For some reason, I just thought man nipples, like hairy man nipples when you said it.
I mean,
I didn't immediately go to the
sound engineer. Andrew shows no discrepancy. He likes nipples of all types. He's a man of current year. He doesn't care.
All right.
So let's shut the fuck up. Let's end this.
It's 2016 as fuck. You can have hairy man nipples.
Current year as fuck,
it's
everybody.
Okay. It's current year.
Thank you guys. We love you. We are Experience Grind Podcast. We'll be back with you as soon as you can stand.